In his day job, Mort Rosenblum's been a war correspondent, the chief international correspondent for the AP, and executive editor of the International Herald Tribune. In between, and on the side, he explores chocolate. From his houseboat on the Seine in Paris to remote islands off the coast of Africa and Venezuela, Rosenblum set out to discover what makes a great chocolate. He investigated cacao plantations, the secret laboratories of chocolate manufacturers, and the kitchens of artisan chocolatiers. He tells the story in his book Chocolate, A Bittersweet Saga of Dark and Light.
First thing I did is I located the places I thought I'd find the most interesting cacao plantations along the equator. And as I'm also sort of a war reporter in my day job, there happened to be a really handy little war in the Ivory Coast, which grows 40% of the world's cacao, so that worked out. And then I set about trying to find the world's best chocolate makers, wherever I could find them.
All this work that you went to, and yet you live in France, which I understand is maybe the home of the best chocolate in the world.
Well, the truth is, at the end of this 3 years of research, I found that probably the three chocolate makers that I admired the most were within walking distance of my boat in Paris.
So what is it about chocolate? And how long did it take you to discover what it is about chocolate that makes it special?
You know, I discovered, I had this epiphany. I think I was in the shop of a little place, a guy by the name of Jacques Genin, who doesn't even have a store. I mean, I got to the address, I was sure I was wrong. And the door opened 2 inches, and I knew this was the place. I mean, this odor, this aroma came out and wafted me. And I got to know Jacques, and one day he handed me something, this lovely little square of dark chocolate. And I took a bite, you know, his eyes are kind of sparkling. And I bit into this, and I could just, I mean, there's something about once you learn how to taste chocolate, and that's what really makes the difference, is it's very much like wine, the flavor curve. I mean, you can hear it snap if it's really well made. It dissolves on your back of your tongue and then it goes cleanly away, leaves this wonderful aftertaste.
I'm still curious, though, to know how you developed the ability to tell, because, you know, a lot of Americans eat a lot of milk chocolate.
A lot of candy, yeah.
Yeah.
But you can teach yourself. It's very much like wine. I mean, you can, you know, you start with what you know, and then you just explore in different directions and see what you like and give yourself the time and the opportunity to actually taste it and savor it and then go for the good stuff. And in the end, you find, like wine, with chocolate, there's Ripple and there's also Rothschild. I mean, there are some names to keep in mind. There's Valrhona, which is probably the best chocolate factory in the world. It's a small factory in the Rhone Valley. I wrote a chapter called Valrhona Valhalla, and I said it's to chocolate makers, it's the closest thing there is to heaven, except that St. Peter's a lot easier to deal with. As I say, I'm a reporter, and I finally got into the Valrhona factory, but getting into North Korea is a lot easier. I mean, they've kind of started to lighten up a bit, but they're the reason, for example, why there's a wonderful Italian chocolate maker named Amadei. This guy by the name of Tessieri, who went in with his sister and his very, very tough mother, and, you know, they went to visit Valrhona. They wanted to import some Valrhona into Italy, and the French essentially said, no, you Italians aren't ready for this. And so they got really angry. And they went home and they gathered all the family money they could and they began making incredible chocolate. And on top of that, they went to this place, this Chihuahua in Venezuela, and bought a bunch of baseball uniforms and made a bunch of friends and edged out Valrhona to get all the beans. So, you know, some really funny stories. Oh, bitter stuff, nasty stuff, but interesting.
A bitter fight, but sweet chocolate as a result.
Absolutely. I mean, it can get awfully nasty. I mean, Hershey and Mars fought for generations. And of course, Cadbury and Fry, nothing like Cadbury and Fry and some of the other Quaker families in England. I remember one time I've got one story I really love. When the Cadburys and the Fries a few generations ago were sharing a plantation in South America, and Cadbury found a way to kind of screw Fry out of the beans and left him without raw material. So when old man Fry died, there was a funeral service for him in Westminster Abbey, you know, this huge cathedral, and it was full. And Cadbury came to the funeral service, but he came in late, and Fry's widow saw him from all the way across these vaults, and she sees him walking. She stands up and yells, "Get out, devil!"
Tell me, what's it like? What's involved in harvesting cocoa beans so that we can all enjoy our chocolate?
Well, it's a lot of work. About 99%, I would guess, of people that harvest cocoa, no matter under what conditions, have never tasted chocolate. 99% of the people who make finished chocolate have never seen a cacao tree. The pods grow directly off the trees and the branches, and they have to be cut off with a sharp machete hook. And then the pods have to be cut open very carefully so that there's maybe 40 or 50 beans inside. And then the beans are scooped out and dried, packed in banana leaves, and fermented for about 8 days. And then they're taken off to Europe in containers, And then there's a whole other process that, you know, for making chocolate from these beans. The beans are roasted and winnowed and ground, and they're melted into a what they call chocolate liquor, which isn't liquor, but it's liquid. And then it gets to the final process called conching, where the chocolate just is moved back and forth in these big vats, sometimes for 3 days. And, you know, the volatile flavor elements go, and it builds up this beautiful, smooth texture and wonderful taste. And it's an extremely complex process.
It begins to make sense that chocolate's so expensive. But do any of the people who harvest it see any of that money?
No. As a matter of fact, I talked to a cocoa producer in the Ivory Coast, and I was at his plantation, and I noticed back in the bushes there was the remains of a 57 Chevy and a 56 Rambler. I mean, there were, you know, chickens where the engines were, and I mean, the roof was all rusted away and stuff. But it turns out that when his father ran the plantation, if he had a good year, he could buy a Detroit car with white walls and a radio and all. Now, if this guy had a good year, I mean, he'd be lucky to be able to replace the leather on his sandals. It's very difficult. I mean, the problem is there's a whole corrupt middleman system in the Ivory Coast. The marketing system is really bad. I mean, there's a lot of things in the process that, I mean, partly it's the price is determined on a world market. And with all this good chocolate that we're eating now, the really high-end chocolate flavor cocoa that the market calls it, a lot of these producers are, in fact, making the money they deserve. And one, we're getting better cocoa, better chocolate, much better chocolate. And two, the producers are making more money.
Let's go back to the beans for a minute and tell me what you discover you like. And I know that everybody has a different taste. It's the same with wine. You're not going to get two people to agree on what's the best wine. But for you, what do you look for when you now, with your developed palate, go looking for a good chocolate?
Well, the holy grail among chocolate people is a variety called Criollo, which is the original. It's not the original, but it's what the Spanish found when they discovered chocolate and cocoa 500 years ago. The beans are very white, and they're very clear and beautiful, and the pods are oblong-shaped. But it's a very frail tree. It doesn't produce very much. And today, probably only 1% of chocolate is made with Criollo. These beans are still found in a few plantations in Mexico, a few, there's a part in Venezuela, some in Madagascar for some reason, they got carried over there. But there are experiments now, there are experimental plantations south of Lake Maracaibo where they're trying to bring back this old flavor. But Criollo is, when you can find good Criollo, it has a wonderful kind of fruity, long-lasting kind of throaty, earthy flavor, which I really like. Mm.
Do you have a sense of where chocolate is headed?
I think it's headed upward. I think it's headed very much where olive oil was maybe 5-6 years ago, where all of a sudden, I mean, in the United States and elsewhere, I think as well, where people have discovered, you know, the fact that there is this range, there is this wonderful, you know, ability to mortgage your house and get good chocolate. And so people are willing to spend more money for quality. You're starting to find a lot of appreciation for good chocolate in America.
Mort Rosenblum is chief international correspondent for the AP and the author of Chocolate, a bittersweet saga of dark and light.
Creamy, mellow pleasure, a delicate delight, a luscious bit of chocolate will soothe your appetite. Come on in and take your shoes off. I'll make